Okay, a quick introduction to today's episode. I have my guest, Ori Hofmeckler. A lot of you will be familiar with Ori's books that I've linked regularly on my Snapchat, particularly Maximum Muscle, Minimum Fat, and Unlock Your Muscle Gene, which are two of my favorite nutritional books. And Ori is also the author of the new book, The Seven Principles of Stress and The Warrior Diet, which was one of the pioneering books for intermittent fasting. So later on in the episode, we get into intermittent fasting, which I know a lot of you are interested in knowing more about or possibly applying in your own life. And Ori talked through his beginner strategies for actually applying intermittent fasting into your own life and the benefits it has on your health, on your energy levels, on your sex drive, and then all the topics from his new book, The Seven Principles of Stress. And basically, I let Ori do a lot of talking on this episode to try and provide as much value. He is just a wealth of wisdom in terms of the body. He's got some pretty out there ideas. He's very, very opinionated and feels very strongly on his thought process and belief systems, and is one of the reasons why he was such a great guest. So I hope you all get a load of value from today's episode. It jumps around in terms of talking about stress, talking about intermittent fasting, talking about Ori's history and all his different books and the way that they've basically changed the world and how intermittent fasting took off as a result of the things that he pioneered. So hope you enjoy. Catch you all on the other side.
You're listening to the Brian Keane Fitness Podcast, where Irish fitness entrepreneur Brian Keane answers your questions and interviews leaders in the world of fitness, health, mindset, and natural wellness. Come join the fun.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Brian Keane Fitness Podcast. We talk everything fitness, nutrition, and mindset to help you with your goals. I am so excited for today's episode. I have my guest, Ori Hofmeckler, who's a modern Renaissance man whose formative military experience prompted a life interest in survival science. A graduate of the Bezalel Academy of Art and the Hebrew University in Jerusalem, where he received a degree in human science. He is a world-renowned artist whose political satire artwork has been featured in books and magazines worldwide. Ori has been mentioned on my podcast and on different Snapchats and different Instagrams because you may be familiar with his book Unlock Your Muscle Gene and Maximum Fat, Minimum Maximum Muscle, Minimum Fat, that I think I've probably snapped more often than any other nutrition and fitness book out there. So today's episode, we are going to talk on things from his new book, The Seven Principles of Stress, Extend Life, Stay Fit and Ward Off Fat, and basically just talk everything fitness. I'm a massive fan, Ori, so I'm so excited from a personal level to have you on the podcast and just dig into your knowledge on everything. I've been reading your books, I think 6-7 years ago was the first time I came across it, and I've reread them over and over again, and they're ones that I've ruined with highlighters from going back and taking notes. So talk us a little bit more about your journey. What is your background and expand on anything that I may have left out in the introduction?
I don't know why, but the story about Michelangelo just crossed my mind. And very nice to meet you, Brian. I mean, thank you for inviting me. Somebody asked Michelangelo, what is a good sculpture? And the answer was, take a good sculpture, put it on top of a hill and roll it down. Whatever is left is a good sculpture. And of course, metaphorically, it says everything about us. If stress doesn't break us, whatever is left is the best of us. We evolve for stress. It's inherent to life. Most of us already know that we benefit from stress like exercise or even fasting. But there's much more than that. So much more that I decided to write a book. We as today, modern human, we need some kind of a map to navigate between destructive stress and beneficial stress. We know that stress can be destructive, and it's true. Stress can kill you from toxicity to starvation to extreme heat or extreme cold. Humans and animals can die, and we know that they die. But it is paradoxical, like many things in nature, that optimum exposure to these deadly stressors can actually heal you. This is an incredible phenomenon that most people are not even aware of. Most deadly toxin in very small amount can be very beneficial. The process that makes stress beneficial for us, it's called hormesis. All biological systems, from bacteria to human, are programmed for hormesis. That means you and every one of you who listen to this podcast, you evolved this way. You are biologically programmed to benefit from stress. And if you don't let your body the chance to benefit from stress, you will spiral down. It doesn't matter how much money you have and what you were thought or read before. And it doesn't even matter the size of your muscle and how fit you look. You will spiral down. Sooner or later, the aging process will take over and age-related disease. To sum it up, my goal in this book is to show the truth. Based on cutting-edge research, not everybody, not even scientists are fully aware of that, but there are ever-growing group of researchers today that are aware of this phenomena, some of which are associate or friend of mine. I did some project involved with this. This is a stunning material, Brian. Think about it. The early human died, I would say over 10,000 years ago, maybe even 100,000 years ago, was based on food that primarily evolved to help you adapt to stress. We know it contained nutrients that are no longer part of the food chain, nutrients that mimic the effect of exercise. When was the last time you heard about something like this? That you can have nutrient in your body that mimic the effect of exercise even when you don't exercise. That give you the benefit of exercise while you sleep. This is incredible. These are real nutrients. There is ever-growing science about them and how they trigger the same genes and pathway that exercise does. Yet, they're not part of the diet. They're not part of the knowledge. You go to school, you learn about nutrition, you learn almost zero about them. They are not necessarily vitamin, they are not necessarily antioxidant, yet they are more important to your survival than all the essential nutrients that you learn about. In fact, we got too much essential nutrient in our diet today. We got so much synthetic nutrient and antioxidant that it shut down our body. We never evolved. But for the nutrient that we did evolve, those that's supposed to program us to live perhaps twice or even three times more than we think we can live, that keep us biologically fit, that man can get laid when he's like 19 years old, no problem, and women are not supposed to get old so early, okay, they can enjoy great life, be sexy for very old. All this knowledge is forbidden, is taken away. I'm summing it up. What happened instead? We are now raised, instead of like free species, free living species, we are now raised like livestock.
Yeah.
Everything is organized, pre-protected, everything is processed to make us satisfy eating non-stop. If you see factory cows, they're constantly fed. In the warrior diet, I even wrote about it.
Yeah.
It's amazing, Brian, that the ancient Roman people, way over 2,000 years ago, okay, were already aware of the fact that free living are not supposed to eat frequently.
Yeah.
But slaves were fed non-stop like us. Morning, lunch, dinner, snacks, like farm animals. We need to understand that stress is not just inherent to life. We need to understand this phenomena and make sure that we take advantage of it so we can excel to the peak that we biologically evolved to.
I love that. And I know you're a massive fan. And in all of your books, you were actually one of the people who opened up my eyes to factory meats and what was going on that. And you opened up a whole tin of worms for me when I started reading about it in your books. And I started to look into factory cattle and factory chickens. And I'm like, oh my God, the stuff that's happening and the hormones they're pumping into these animals, I'm putting into my body. So when you say, when you talk about the stress and the beneficial stress, what are your, the way that you apply it in your own life or with people that are around you? When you talk about that beneficial stress, break down what areas you're talking about it in. Are you talking about it in the sense of fasting, in the sense of the nutrients you're consuming, the foods you're eating? Expand on that a little bit for me, Ori.
I'll try to be brief because there's so much to talk and you really need to read the book and it takes a while to understand what are the seven principles of stress and how far and beyond it can go.
Yeah.
But let's start with a very simple concept. It's not a concept, it's a fact. Each organism has a system really designed to respond to stress. That system must be activated and alert. You need to keep it intact like you need to keep your brain intact.
Yeah.
It is as important as your heart. It needs to be able to respond to stress because the minute that you fail to respond to stress, you're basically going to be damaged by stress.
Yeah.
So it's any kind of stress. And the most important stressor or organism face is nutritional stress, hence lack of food.
Yeah.
Okay, lack of food or calorie restriction or completely lack of food probably was the most primal dangerous stressor that organism faced. So the evolutionary advantage of us to not only respond but to compensate for the lack of food, and it is incredible. Calorie restriction, over 40% of calorie restriction has shown to extend lifespan and even double lifespan
yeah.
of organism, not only small organism like bacteria, like yeast. Now it starts to show to double lifespan of higher organism, even more so when you put nutrients that mimic calorie restriction, such as berberine, for instance.
Yeah.
Coming from a broccoli, it has shown to yield the same benefit. And it's coming with other bonuses. It actually activate mechanism, inhibit a mechanism that drive the aging process, inhibit mTOR. It can reverse diabetes, type 2 diabetes. In fact, berberine have shown to be more potent than the diabetic drug metformin. So bottom line, nutritional stress is the number one stressor. Second is the physical stress. We all, I'm starting with this stress because you and me and all everybody know what is the truth. You go to the gym, you basically either lift weight or run on sprint intervals or whatever that you do, you immediately feel how your body responds. Adrenal go high, body heat go high. I mean, you tell muscle tissue, you tell this stuff. In the book, in textbook, that is damage to your body. Tearing your muscle, micro injuries, inflammation take place. Why the hell are we doing it? Because when your body responds to compensate, it compensates you with generous multiplied benefits that make your muscle and your whole body actually more and more resilient to stress and more fit. Now, what's interesting is when you combine these two stressors, nutritional stress, lack of food, and physical stress, the impact on your system is much more than each of them alone. Now, who in his mind today agree that you are supposed to exercise while fasting? It sounds like an exercise suicide. What? Any athlete in his mind who want to score, right? You want to score, you need to put some carbohydrates in your muscle to get your glycogen rolling and not hitting the wall. Wrong concept as far as athleticism. No, absolutely not wrong. It's the ideal concept. I tell you why. When we evolved as a species, when God created us, the goal was not to win the Olympics. The goal was to create a resilient species that can better survive and long live. And in order to do that, we have a system that allows us to excel. So when we combine, when we challenge with the need to fight or fly, flee, when we fast, lack of food, you're under attack by a predator or a foe, you still need to perform. That's why your body compensates you most and very fast. It is when your glycogen is totally empty that miraculous actions start to take place. As you get older, you start to, there's already evidence that came a few years ago of regeneration of stem cells that will never be otherwise wake up. It has such an impact not on your muscle, on your brain. You activate gene and pathways that compensate your muscle by increasing the muscle fiber quality, not the size of your muscle, the quality. Brian, you can be skinny and have the power of a guy 100 pounds heavier, muscle heavier than you are.
Yeah.
By increasing mitochondria density, by transforming the type 2B muscle to the type 2AX, which is the super muscle fiber. Just think about it. Look at it biologically. When there is a process that's going only one direction towards improvement, means that the direction that you go is superior. That means if because of improved fitness, type 2B convert to type 2AX, you know the type 2AX is a superior muscle fiber. So the typical fitness muscle today, the bodybuilder or the short-term maximum strength muscle, the type 2B, is totally glycolytic. It depends on glucose, on carb for fuel. It has no ability to utilize fat. So a guy can score maybe in some kind of powerlifting or whatever, and I have a lot of respect to this guy that work very hard, but the body unfortunately is not biologically fit. That means it's not fit to better survive. In biology, there is no mercy. Natural selection don't ask you for the size of your muscle. One goal is for sure. There must be a very good shift in your life from carb to fat fuel. The more fit you are, the better your body is, the more your body is able to utilize fat fuel in the muscle. Failing to utilize fat fuel shows that your mitochondria is not dense enough or not protected. And that's just on the surface. So modern fitness that fail to train the body to improve muscle fiber and shift from carb to fat fuel, it's just the wrong fitness. It's a fitness for performance, not a fitness to survive. And I show in my book some survey, clear facts, that some of the so-called fittest people among us, including endurance, not just powerlifting, long distance runner, long distance skiers, for instance, triathlon, the average lifespan is as short as the typical couch potato. How is it that the fittest people among us cannot live longer than the unfittest? In any biologist, this is a biology blasphemy. It's impossible, but it is possible because this long distance marathon runner, for instance, they violated the code of stress. They apply too much stress, too prolonged, which actually shortened their life. They train to perform rather than train to better live. Take the same training, redesign it, give them more time to recuperate, shorten the distance during the drills, give them the proper nutritional compensation, and these people probably can outlive the average person today. It is tragic that young guy today going to play football or be an athlete or a triathlon, what I just mentioned, a track athlete, and because of the trainer bear, because of the way he's fed, because of wrong concept, he won't be able to live long. And look at the start. You can look at many boxers and great people who were specimen in the time that they were competing, including short distance runners, turned to be overweight or obese or diabetic later on in life. There is no reason for that. We are not supposed to age this way. We just need to know how to take, understand the truth, understand the zone of stress that really benefit us, and we can do very well. So with this, per your question, I'll try to sum it up. Between physical and nutritional stress, there are of course many other stressors, and not everything is just negative, but there are some very big negative. We also need to know what to avoid on the big picture, because there are substances in life today more than ever that inhibit, Brian, your ability to respond to stress.
Yeah.
It actually shut down this system that we, awesome system we just talked about. Sugar is the central to all that. Sugar by itself is a food. So in small amount, we evolved, I guess, sugar was scarce in the time that human reached peak evolution. A little bit of honey here and there probably won't help you, especially when you are depleted. In fact, when you are glycogen depleted, you can eat the whole cake and still be okay.
Yeah.
This is how resilient you are under stress. However, for the typical person who need to take advantage of stress, the nonstop exposure to sugar, frequent meals, pesticides are very, very big inhibitors of stress response. Plasticizer derivatives, preservative, and synthetic nutrient. Yes, the vitamin pills that you take inhibit your stress response, shut down. For the typical person, if you don't know what to avoid, you will again spiral down. So the last element on stress, on the overview, is this point. We were told it's the energy factor. It's the energy factor. We were told that we need energy. The business of energy product is one of the fastest growing in the world.
Yeah.
Because today most people are so tired, they're constantly attracted to something that will pick up their energy. So they put in and in, from pick-me-up food for sugary food to pills that boost your adrenal, everything, just energy. Not understanding that the truth is that it is energy deficit, not energy overload, that trigger your stress response, that make you excel. It is energy deficit. Brian, it's when you exercise and deplete energy that your body gets a signal to improve. It's when you fast and deplete energy. It's the number one trigger of excellence. Your body is so sensitive, all of us, from bacteria to human, are so sensitive to energy that we have a mechanism in the cell to detect when we are depleted from energy. Accumulations of adenosine monophosphate, the lowest reduced energy molecule, not ATP, AM, trigger probably the most powerful longevity pathway, fat burning pathway, anti-aging pathway. It's called AMPK, AMPK kinase. That's an enzyme, basically, that does everything that you can think ideal in your body. Inhibit the mechanism drive aging, reverse, make your insulin very sensitive. It could reverse the possibility of diabetes. The body get in a mode of full repair rather than inflammation, so it's very anti-inflammatory. And most importantly, it activates the whole heat shock protein system. It wakens it up to search and destroy when your energy depleted, like very depleted. Your body is going to a very unique mode of searching and destroy every weak and sick element in your body will be searched and destroyed. Weak and sick cells, including cancer cell, will be tagged and eliminated. Think how awesome this mechanism is, how awesome this system is, and it can, and this compound can percolate in your system, supposed to percolate for most of the day.
Yeah.
Now, for most people, they don't even activate it for a second a day. They are so busy eating constantly or exposing themselves to all these inhibitors that I just mentioned, that they don't give their body a chance to ever thrive, cleanse itself, or resist disease and aging. But you can today give this system a chance to dominate your body, prevent you from ever be susceptible to inflammatory disease and even cancer, if you just know what to do.
Yeah.
And it's not that complicated. So this is what this book is about. It's about understanding what's good and bad. I cannot tell you what to do. Because, you know, the typical chocolates and sugar are addictive. I explained in my book, they really hit the same receptors in most opioid receptors, crack cocaine.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
If you need it, you need it. I think part of the solution between us, Brian, I'm working on that. I hope to be able to succeed. I believe I will, because we have prototype. It's time to offer practical solution. It's time to offer even product that can help people overcome sugar, overcome junk food. Talking, I guess, is not just good enough.
Yeah.
But it's good to know also what's going on. You cannot just, you know, go here and there. I think, you know, talking about fitness, Brian, I'm working on a project. It's very interesting. Whatever I say is nothing new. I mean, the knowledge is out there. I just put it together in a way that look a bit more controversial, because there is a phenomenon, you're probably aware of that. First of all, scientific community is like any community. The vast majority are plumbers. It's hired by a drug company to do this and this research, and that's what they do.
Yeah.
So I'm doing. There are professional people. I'm doing it with full respect, but there are some very few visionaries and architects who try to understand the overall concept and offer honest to God solution to human life. And usually history remember that. My feeling is my job is just to collect the best information and show the truth regardless, because I'm not here to offer any substance for a drug company, but rather a strategy of better survival, because it is survival that I'm interested most. And I believe most people should be interested in, maybe all people. However, when you look at the spot, your podcast is mostly about fitness, which is correctly so. I mean, what is fitness? What is the definition of fitness? And if you ask people, what is fitness? Let me ask you, it's a conversation. What do you think is fitness?
Well, I think it really varies depending on the person you talk to. Like the traditional fitness, when people think, one of the things that I've talked about regularly on the podcast, one of the reasons that I probably related so much with your books, is that people confuse health and fitness. Because for me, when we think, people think health and fitness and they put it together in the same bracket, and they're not the same thing. Like you can be really fit, like athletically fit, you could have a six pack, you can be super lean, have a load of muscle, and people think, oh, he's really fit, but or she's really fit, but their insides may be a mess from the supplements they're using or the foods they're using. And then health is energy, your longevity, your ability to sleep and recover, and they split. You know, I'll regularly talk when somebody will ask me a question about a supplement is always an example. I'm like, well, this is where certain supplements split health and fitness. That supplement may help get you fitter. You know, an energy drink may help get you fitter, inverted commas, quote unquote, fitter, because you'll be able to train harder, but it's not necessarily making you healthier. So for me, I like the merging. It's one of the reasons that I resonate so much with you, is because of that health aspect that you come from. And to me, it's, I've always felt, and again, I must say, I'm largely piggybacking, because you were one of the first nutrition, those nutrition books you wrote were one of the first ones I really kind of clung to and was like, oh, this makes sense. I was like, I get this. I was like, if our body's functioning with quality food, or we're putting it under quality stress as needed, we're going to respond and have more energy. And the more energy we have, the fitter we'll be if we're doing exercise or whatever it is. So for me, it's the combination where you can sleep, you've got good energy through the day, you feel good, you're not sore when you've got to walk a couple of blocks, you know, or walk a couple of miles and you're not out of breath. That's what it means for me. But I'm very aware it varies person to person. You know, what would your definition of a BRE?
Well, you said it great in your words, and I really like to hear that. My definition is very simple. There's only one fitness. It's biological fitness. Everything else is just a word for an industry, want your money to get something for definition of a word that was never fully defined. So if your fitness is just the amount of weight that you lift, let's define it this way. But in biology and anthropology and the whole human science, there was never one word that showed that the amount of weight that you lift is equivalent to your level of fitness. Yeah. Nothing. But I tell you what is associated: your ability to survive. Your ability to survive, and not only this moment, tomorrow, week after tomorrow, 5 years after tomorrow, and 50 years after tomorrow. That is your fitness. What are you investing in your body right now to better survive every day and feel it and have it? So the book is about biological fitness, where survival is the key factor, and sexual performance, of course, and
most importantly,
reproductivity come with the territory. You cannot be fit and not being able to reproduce. Yeah. I'm not saying that you have to reproduce, but being able, because at least in biology, scientists for many years have been convinced that natural selection look at our ability to contribute to the species,
yeah,
as a critical factor, not just reproduction. You can see that sometime old men or women, single mom or dad, who take care of the offspring of the grandchildren, can live much longer because they have a mission in the species. But the quintessential mission is the ability to reproduce, but that again is on the surface. So survival, reproduction, and etc. But what is survival? So one of the key elements of good survival is the ability to fight inflammation. Inflammation is the evil thing. Every time that you face any kind of stress or disease, it always involves certain kind of inflammatory or chronic inflammation.
Yeah.
Time is a very important factor. And in fact, I can tell you, Brian, take inflammation, add to that the time factor, you usually end up with cancer. This is how cancer happened. Inflammatory areas, if it's not been counteracted, if they continue to be chronically inflammatory, could become cancerous.
Yeah.
This is a serious. And if not cancerous, definitely aging. So inflammation, aging, cancer is an equation. Now, when your body has the means to constantly counter inflammation, you become a specimen. You become something that is resilient not only to disease and stress, but fit to resist aging. In fact, I put it in my book, there's a whole chapter about aging. Aging is not a normal process.
Yeah.
We are not, aging is a disease that has to do more with stress than with age. In fact, you can see today kids that are 25 years old and already aging, and people who are 65 years old and not aging in the same category.
Yeah.
So the ability to resist stress define your age and capacity and fitness. I'm mentioning it because the devil is on the details. And when you look at today's concept of shoving that protein to get back, and I was honestly part of the crime. I did not fully understand, though I did understand, not the magnitude of damage that can be created.
Yeah, let's talk on that, Ori, because this is something I'm super curious about. Because one of the reasons that I think I gravitated towards your books and your work and kind of went down that life change myself was because I went so extreme one way. Like, I used to compete as a bodybuilder, I used to be a professional fitness model. I had the fitness look, but my God, I'd say if you turned something on my insides, it would have, like, I was sending myself to an early grave with the way I was training. I was training 3-4 hours a day. I was eating, you know, every supplement you could think of and fappers you could think of, like. And it made me go the other way because it made me realize that I wasn't sleeping, my energy was terrible, I was eating loads of processed food, like protein bars and things to fit my macros, and it made me go out the other side. So I'm curious on your background, were you ever extreme on one side, or has this always been your philosophy on it? What brought you to this point? Because I'm not sure the year of your first book, but they've been published for quite a long time. And this thought process you've had, were you extreme on one side and then did you go the other way? Or has this always been your life philosophy? Talk me through what kind of led you to this point.
I never had a chance to be a bodybuilder. Let's put it like this. I was intrigued by that as a kid, but never had a chance simply because I had to join the army in a very young age. Though I was a champion in my country when I was 16, a bit over 16 for gymnastics, and I way too tall and too big for being a gymnast, but for high school. So that was something. So I was already aware of the importance of good meal, only that in gymnastics, you are not supposed to be super big. You need to keep your muscle viable and be in a shape. If you look at gymnasts, they don't really look like bodybuilders. Yeah. But I was intrigued by the whole idea. Who is not, when you learn about Greek mythology and you see this big sculpture of Hercules, yeah, with a big, yeah, muscle, and you said, oh man, and then Marvel Comics with Superman and later on Spider-Man and all these super muscular phenomena. I don't know. I think he went and took bodybuilders all to see this cartoon.
Yeah.
You think, and then later on movies with Arnold Schwarzenegger when he's Conan the Barbarian, you think the Barbarian look like this. Awesome. Awesome. And by the way, Schwarzenegger is a smart guy because you look at his approach today, he's becoming vegetarian.
Yeah.
That's a story by itself. What happened to me was that I realized the Warrior Diet was written in the year 2000,
yeah,
which is about 18 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
But I started the concept 2 years before that. So about 20 years ago, I realized that I need to put it together. I experienced early on that there is no correlation between the size of the muscle to my ability to perform in real life activity, military combat or fight or flight activity. The size of your muscle is secondary. Boxers already know that.
Yeah.
You can see even in the UK or Ireland, some great boxer come and they don't look super muscular. They look lean, they look defined, yeah, but they don't look, it's not the size of the muscle, is the ability to react properly, to use your brain, to sustain alertness, to keep your game, to be in control, that in moment of truth allow you to better survive. I realize that when I don't eat, my brain and body respond much better than after being on a full stomach. So if my drill is just to lift weight vertically or horizontally, it doesn't need big brain to just leave weight above the head. I guess people can feed and train, but if your mission is to survive for hours and hours or maybe days at a time, you need a different strategy. You need to work on your brain and muscle in a total different way. And that's where the concept for intermittent fasting came. When I published the book, Brian, I was absolutely attacked committing dietary blasphemy.
Yeah, you nearly pioneered that whole area. Like, you're the name that gets associated with intermittent fasting. And everyone, it's so funny because anytime it's starting to pick up, you know, as you've seen in the last 15 years, gradually it picks up trend, and then the studies come out, and you've been talking about this for more than 20 years. Like,
you know what? In the beginning, this to say to people that breakfast is the worst meal of the day was really dietary heresy, committing dietary heresy. And then to say not only you should skip breakfast, skip the lunch too. Have only one meal per day. I remember I'm saying it to people. I'm not Christian, but even Jesus had his Last Supper. He didn't have his last breakfast. It never exists. Breakfast did not even exist in the past. In the Bible, it's written. It's probably something small. Basically, 2 years after my book was published, and absolutely create a lot of controversy and a lot of resistance. A study on intermittent fasting was conducted by Professor Mark Matson, financed by the NIH. And they found that they put mice on a diet similar to the warrior diet. There was extension of 50% lifespan, reversal of diabetes, and reversal of toxin, resistant to toxin that cause brain-related diseases like Alzheimer or Parkinson. It was an incredible phenomenon. Professor Matson even used my book for one of his articles in Lancet magazine, the British journal.
Yeah.
And suddenly the BBC talked about it. So suddenly they asked me for interviews and this and that. And that was the moment that intermittent fasting concept officially was born, but it was born with my concept on the warrior diet. It did not exist before. Now any Joe Schmo, Brian, is taking himself the credit of creating. You know, I want to talk about.
No, it's yours, Ori. Anybody listening here, it's Ori Hoffmeister. If you've ever tried or are doing or have heard intermittent fasting, I'm telling you now, this is your baby. Like, you know.
So Brian, every Joe Schmo come now. Think about how many combination could be. Fast every 2 days, don't fast 3 days. Then 3 days fasting, 1 day overeating. 2 weeks overeating, 1 week fasting. So every Joe Schmo come with a combination or every day fasting. And I can tell you now, and I wrote it, the evidence in my book, there can be only one kind of intermittent fasting. It has to be within the circadian clock of 24 hours.
Yeah.
Yes, you can fast for a week or 30 days, or you can fast every other day. But studies on every other day fasting already show the consequences on humans. In my book, I explain, stress-like fasting is like any other stress. It can be beneficial, extremely, or it can be detrimental. Each of us, and you're right by putting it individually, have a threshold of tolerance to stress. Each of us is different. We are all living, though, on one frame which is unique to all of us, the circadian clock. I have no doubt that tomorrow, in the morning, here in California, there will be light. The sun will be out. And I've no doubt that tonight the sun will be down. That's the way it was working epidemiologically for millions of years.
Yeah.
So I have no doubt that this is what's going to happen. And not that I have no doubt, my body and your body and everybody's body is programmed this way.
Yeah.
Not precisely, but around the circadian clock of 24 hours, everything that is extended beyond that can cause a problem. Let's look at your ability, your stress response in the endocrinology system. One of the key response to stress is the fight or flight response. Fight and flight response is designed to help you react immediately to deadly stressors. It could be some kind of a snake hitting you, or a foe of somebody with a gun or a sword, or anything, fire, avalanche, whatever, tsunami, you need to react fast. This hormone, secreting of stress hormone, particularly adrenaline and cortisol, the response is massive, effective, only if the response is short. If there is this response is prolonged, it can become deadly and counter-effective. Now, what happened today, because people become intolerant to stress, they live with a chronically activated fight and flight response that deteriorate their bodies. Cortisol is a good hormone. There's nothing wrong, but when it's chronically activated, it destroys your body. It messes with blood sugar, messes with your ability to regulate body weight, messes with your fat cells. The good genes, PPAR, alpha, and gamma, are inhibited. You basically become inflamed and irresistant to stress, basically intolerant, vulnerable to the aging process.
Yeah.
What happened is that intermittent fasting must be done within a frame that is tolerable by the body. So there is a very good likelihood, based on every scientific database, that we can do very well on one main meal per day. In my opinion, should be eating at night, but that's another subject.
Yeah.
But one main meal per day, not every other day. People who eat every other day, that means fast, can do maybe for a while, but virtually all of them testify that they stop sleeping at night, they start to get into jet lag.
Yeah.
There are really disturbance regarding your ability to reach satiety and compensation. Big part of my book is the story about the reward system. Brian, if you stress yourself, your body expect a reward.
Yeah.
This is the way we are, and with all animals, we have an instinct, in fact, to stress ourselves because it's always involving reward.
Yeah.
If I tell you, Brian, you're not allowed to exercise now for several months, you're going to be absolutely depressed. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, of course, if I forbid you to eat, you can die from starvation, and then also it's another kind of frustration. So stress and reward always go together. You expect it in your brain, but your body expects it physically too. The reward was always inherent to stress, and when it is not attached to stress, the problem starts. People who do not or are incapable of receiving reward biologically are seeking for that chronically. That's where addiction comes, obsessive behavior, up to the point that people even can finish with suicide.
Yeah.
I wrote about it, I'm not gonna come to the whole story now, but stress and reward have to be coming together. The intermittent fasting of one main meal per day, like in the warrior diet, grant you reward every day. In fact, every day you're looking for this reward, yeah, and you will receive it while your body keep improving. Yeah. It's a win-win situation. Every other intermittent fasting do not grant you this reward. And if it comes, it's too much of a delay. Your fight and flight response is way too prolonged. What is the point of that? Why are people doing? The other thing that I talk about intermittent fasting is that you don't have to water fast. As I say, there are certain kind of nutrients that complement fasting.
Yeah.
Some of them mimic the impact of calorie restriction, and some of them even complement. So you can incorporate and eat small amount of berries or good grass-fed whey protein or milk, small amount, to get this nutrient that further support your body while it's under nutritional stress. It's again a win-win-win situation rather than just doing a swim. There's nothing wrong with water fasting. I'm just saying you can do better than that. Just don't let your body fall into chronic stress. Don't let you be yourself be under chronic stress in any way. I showed the method. But one of the things that fell between the chair, I want to talk to you quickly about this, when it's coming to fitness, guess what? It's your saliva. The salivary system is totally ignored. People don't even know what the hell is the salivary system has to do with my fitness. And I'll tell you, again, I myself did not fully evaluate, even though I wrote about it several times, how critical it is. Look, Brian, you know the spot nutrition maybe better than I. You're in and out, and you know that protein shakes and diet shakes are central to the spot nutrition today, central to the fitness. It's a multi-billion dollar industry based on protein powder or diet powder that is supposed to mix with water or milk and drink them. And they are fast assimilating, nourishing the mind.
They do it all. They make you bigger, they make you leaner, yeah. They make you fucking fly.
But let me tell you something about this. The truth is that we never evolved for liquid meals. In fact, they don't fit us at all. And the two main reasons is this. Number one, your saliva is the number one organ to protect you. Not only to protect you from infection or whatever it is, the saliva is a powerhouse of enzyme and anaerobic bacteria and, in fact, probiotics, okay, that not only help you masticate and pre-digest the food, which is very important, it gives your signal and your organ signals that food is coming and prepare them to do their job, and the liver job is critical. Liver need to constantly detoxify, help. Utilization of nutrients, not just driving protein to the muscle. It's really making sure that your body machinery is working properly and toxin is removed, etc. That is critical. But even more so, your saliva have a pathway that people generally are not aware of. And I want to do a step back. And this pathway, by the way, give you incredible fitness advantage by reducing the cost of oxygen, by protecting your mitochondria and increase mitochondria density in your muscle. It gives you amazing cardiovascular protection, better blood flow, and more life. Now, what is going on here? And if you don't use the saliva, or your saliva is not intact, you're losing all this benefit, inherently critical. In my book, I argue against the eating of meat. I clearly show that, of course, a factory cows or eating obese animal or poor animal, it's just a bad thing. I mean, if I was a Rex dinosaur, and I was smart, genius, I would never eat an obese person, honestly, off of the lean. Because obese animals have inflammatory hormones. Yeah. They are not supposed to come. They give your body the same signal that they give the body, the obese itself, animal itself, which is to still get fat and inflamed and die young. Why would you eat an animal that is sick? Or why would you even eat a turkey that his lifespan is only 4 months versus 4 to 6 years? Why would you put your body, biology is about signal, not just macronutrient. Why do you give your body the right signals like this? Now, we don't have inflammatory hormones like this in the plant kingdom, especially not on wild plant. So when we evolved in East Africa, I would say in open grassland, the vast majority of food actually came from the pasture, whether it was sprouts, grasses, legumes, in season, seeds and not. When you look at the human scar, we lost the front teeth and the molar that's supposed to tell meat. As our brain increased in size twice as much, we earned two genes in mutation of testosterone that allow us to still have high testosterone. We have one of the highest testosterone species, but testosterone can basically shatter your productivity, ironically, when you have too much.
Yeah.
So we earn two genes that keep us, allow us to be reproductive, but in a different way than other species. As all this process happened, our jaw has changed. And now, even though we are predator, we can kill. We are in the end of the line of the predator. We do not have the enzyme like other predator, canine or feline, that convert rancid or D protein into L protein.
Yeah.
And if you look at our cheek teeth, they have a flat wear of basically vegetarian animal, not carnivores. No predator in the world has such a jaw. Means that we are more gatherer than hunters. Our enzymatic system and our morphology clearly show an evidence in favor of vegetarianism. And when you say push calf to sow, you have to choose between meat and vegetable. Clearly, meat will not be able to keep you alive, but vegetarian food will give you all the nutrients that you can continue for many, many years and longevity, if you know what to do. Why do I say that? Because your saliva has the capacity to absorb nitrate from green vegetables or vegetarian or beets, convert it in your tongue with anaerobic bacteria into nitrite. Nitrite is very bioactive. Nitrite is shoot very effectively to your organ where it's an muscle when it's converted to nitric oxide without toxicity. Without toxicity. The other pathway doesn't involve toxicity. And then all the benefits that I just talked about start to happen. Deletion of blood vessel, reduction of blood pressure, reduction of the cost of oxygen. Think about it, Brian. You do one activity, right? Are you still with me?
Yeah. You know, I mean, the evolutionary side gets me super focused on what you're saying. My brain is just going crazy when you're talking about the saliva and the way it evolved. Even as soon as you said it, when you talked about our mouth and the way we were evolved, I'm like, my brain started ticking and going, oh my God, that makes perfect sense.
Just think about it, that whatever that you did action now, when you're loaded with this nitric oxide metabolites, your oxygen costs reduce on regular activity, you show between 20 to 40%. This is incredible. Even reduction of 3% is incredible. That means that your mitochondria, you know, the biggest damage that happened to your body happened in the mitochondria. People don't understand maybe, but mitochondria produce, as it produce energy, the more energy it produce, the more free radical it produce. So if you don't neutralize the free radical, if it's not protected, it basically destroys the mitochondria and the cell itself.
Yeah.
You know, with this system, it's so perfectly built that it protects from mitochondria from oxidative damage. And it also increased the density. I mean, more mitochondria are seated in your muscle. It's a quadruple win situation. Your cardiovascular system is protected. You becoming biologically super fit. In fact, the nitrates that is coming from this pathway can substitute oxygen as an electron donor. It's just an incredible phenomenon. It reduced the proton leak in the mitochondria to become proton conductance is what produce force basically become more and more efficient. Why don't we hear about it? Because there's no money behind it.
Yeah.
There's no money. How much money can you make by asking people to eat 100 grams of arugula every day?
Yeah.
I mean, how much money can you get? Well, sometimes it's not efficient. So conclusion is this. We never evolved to drink shakes. We're supposed to chew.
Yeah.
At the protein bar that we are such a travesty, I don't even want to talk about.
Yeah, yeah, my audience know. We won't open that tin of worms.
So what is left? Anyway, I'm walking right now. I'm very intrigued, and I work for a couple of years on a solution for that too. But the point is, guys, listen, you want to be fit. If you're not sure about something, then stay with real food. You rather eat your omelette with whatever egg yolk that you put and egg white. It's still better than any protein liquid shake.
Yeah.
Dieters, if you want to lose weight, look at the science. Database clearly show that people take the same food, right? Same food. Put it in liquid and solid form. The liquid form of the food inhibits satiety and causes people to consume up to 30 to 50% more calories.
Studies, yeah.
Because they're not satisfied.
Yeah.
Why would you follow a diet with a liquid food? Just don't do it. Train your body to eat the way it evolved. Use your saliva as an organ and give it a chance to manifest itself and stay biologically fit in the most simple way. If you do get sport nutrition product, do your research, ask question. If the guy who producing you just a meathead, you don't have to use it.
Yeah.
Use stuff that produced by people who understand what is fitness. And if you're not sure, go to the grocery, go to your farmer market. I'm sure in Ireland, is a great place.
Yeah, it's brilliant for great. Farmers markets, yeah.
And get yourself fresh produce, and I can promise you that will do you better benefit. A simple cheese, okay, a simple farmer cheese will provide you better protein than all the shakes that you see out there.
Yeah, absorption is going to be so much better.
There's no question. Just make sure that the cows are grass-fed, that they are not obese or abused. And my opinion, I put in my book, I show the science, if you can, cut down on the meat consumption. And I know it's hard, and I know that meat eaters are great guys, but look at the science. You want to help yourself. You can do very well without it. The cruelty is that to animals is a different subject. That's my main motivation. I love animals, yeah. So they go beyond science. We rescue here. We have pit bull dogs and bull mastiffs and small, and we got cats. And I can tell you, most people have pets, you know. Do you have a pet, by
the
way?
Yeah, I've got a pet dog, yeah.
Oh, right. What kind of dog?
He's a sheepdog. He's awesome.
It's a sheepdog.
Yeah, yeah.
Very smart, very smart. Well, think about it. It's like your own family member.
Yeah.
It's like a kid, having a kid. Think that there are people out there that eat animals like this.
Yeah.
How cruel it is. And I tell you, cows and pigs are intelligent animals. Lamb, if you look at that little lamb, they are very cute and intelligent. How can you possibly kill any? There's no advantage of that at all. So that's my message on that. And if you are overlooking the cruelty part, look at the science part. You're putting something that have hormones, an inflammatory or stress hormone in the body that percolate in your system, give you exactly the same signal. Why would you do it to yourself? So yeah, it's me against the paleo diet.
Yeah.
By the way, I just want you to know, Brian, when I came with the paleo diet, 2 years after that, the paleo diet switches to intermittent fasting.
Coincidence? I think not. Yeah.
So listen, I know the community. These are great people, very dedicated to go back to the ancestral diet.
Yeah.
I just disagree with their vision. I don't think, I believe strongly we are gatherer hunters, not hunter gatherer. And people can do very well on beans and oats. And there's no reason to cut this food out. Oats, wild oats have proven, I know it's a big food in Ireland.
Yeah,
it's proven for thousands of years to be very beneficial. So you cannot just build on theory alone. You really need to look at anecdotal evidence. Yep. I think that a diet that, like the paleo that is primarily based on meat is the wrong diet.
Yeah.
It prohibit people from having food that were on open grassland we evolved to are the wrong diet.
Yeah. I love it. Ori, I could literally just press play and let you talk, and I could listen to you for hours on end. I'm literally just so engrossed. It's having read your books and hearing you talk. It's just it's for, even from my own knowledge, every time I consume anything that you've written or now obviously that I hear, I learn something on my side. You know, even for me, I never thought about the, and I've tried the intermittent fasting from a health aspect, and I didn't get it perfect, but I never thought of when you go to the gym and you get the stress from physical exercise, all your growth or your response or your energy. Because one of the stories I tell is I used to work as an elementary school teacher, and I used to be part-time as a personal trainer at night time, and I used to work out in between because it used to give me energy. And I never thought about the fasting side from nutrition, that when you put your body under a stress from that side, it can actually increase your energy for the same kind of reason biologically. So it's something that I must give another attempt at, because it just dawned on me when you were speaking. I had never looked at it from that point of view. So from a personal point of view, thank you for that. Ori, I'm going to link up everything in the show notes, links to your new book, The 7 Principles of Stress, Extend Life, Stay Fit and Ward Off Fat, The Warrior Diet, all your books, everything. But where is the best place for people to find out more about you, or the best place to pick up the books?
To find more about me, and we are interactive here, go to my Facebook or go to Instagram. This is an alive movement, and we can always communicate with you and update you on everything that happened. And there's, of course, much more. And thank you very much. I really enjoyed this conversation. As far as the 7 principle of stress and the way that it's all in Amazon. I don't know exactly, but I believe Amazon UK and Amazon.
Yeah, I got my, I have it here for anyone watching on the video. I've got it here on, I got mine on Amazon UK. It's also on the Book Depository, because I know a lot of you buy books that I recommend off the Book Depository as well. So everyone in the UK and Ireland that are listening, you'll be definitely able to pick it up there, because I got it on Amazon, but I checked the Book Depository as well.
Beautiful, beautiful.
Ori, so thank you so much again. That this has been amazing, and I will link your Instagram, I will link your Facebook, I'll link the books and everything in the show notes, and across on my channel. So thank you so much again.
I think one more information, if you're looking for this nutrient that mimics stress, I believe we have a presence or a shop in Amazon. It's called Defense Nutrition Shop in Amazon. People can look at this nutrient. It's called SAF, S-A-F, Stress Activated Food. This is something interesting, and the science is already there, and a lot of it in my book, so I hope you guys will enjoy it.
Deadly, I will link that up as well. Ori, thank you again.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.